brought up by AI expert Willy Tadema. Its title, Uncovering Discrimination in Public Fraud Detection Systems. Willy has been working with the Dutch government to ensure fairness and in decision-making and to promote transparency in public AI systems. Let's welcome Willy with a warm applause.
Danke. Okay, what if you relied on government to support yourself and your family, and one day you woke up and found that an algorithm flagged you a potential fraudster? Not because of anything you did, but because of who you are. A young single mother, someone struggling with reading and writing, or someone whose caseworker considers their appearance to be unprofessional. This is not a hypothetical scenario. It happens. And it raises the question, are we okay with that? So, my name is Willy Tadema, and I'm an AI expert working within Dutch government. I advise government organizations on the ethical and responsible use of AI. My team conducts fundamental rights impact assessments and bias assessments on AI systems and ensuring they align with ethical and legal standards. But today, I'm not standing here as a representative of Dutch government, but as myself. I speak as an expert and a practitioner, and this is a personal story. I would like to share with you today my personal observations and lessons learned over the past few years. And I would love to engage with you because I strongly believe only by working together as governments, businesses, civil society, researchers, and journalists can we ensure that AI will benefit the whole of society and not just a privileged few. And for those of you who came here expecting a talk on generative AI, AI agents, and AI threats, I'm sorry, I'll have to disappoint you. That is not my main area of expertise. And though I do not wish to downplay the risks that these algorithms pose, I do believe more attention should be given to forms of AI that have been around for much longer and that pose real risks to large groups of people, some of which already have materialized. And while Dutch government is still cautiously experimenting with generative AI, predictive algorithms and predictive AI have been around for many years in many areas. The outcomes of these systems inform actions and decisions, sometimes with profound impact on people's lives. My expertise is in algorithmic risk profiling by the government, and that's what I would like to discuss with you today. More specifically, algorithmic risk profiling in welfare and social security. Government agencies use risk profiling to help detect fraud in benefits and allowances. They apply certain criteria to determine who will be subject to additional scrutiny. This selection is based on general criteria generally believed to correlate with fraud. In algorithmic risk profiling, this process is automated. The criteria are either defined by experts based on their expert knowledge and experience, or by machines based on patterns in historical data. Government organizations have limited resources, and therefore they use algorithmic risk profiling to focus on the most likely cases and allocate their resources. The idea behind algorithmic risk profiling is to increase the chances of catching fraud and to make inspections as efficient and effectively as possible. Some also argue that algorithms are more objective and therefore less biased than human decision-making, making it also a fairer approach. Well, that sounds great. A government that operates more efficiently, effectively, and more fairly. Unfortunately, in the Netherlands, we also witnessed the dark side of algorithmic risk profiling. Stigmatization, bias, and discrimination are serious risks, alongside with privacy violations. Without transparency and clear explanations, people affected cannot identify mistakes and cannot challenge unfair decisions. Lack of transparency weakens equality of arms, and consequently the right to a fair trial. Without appropriate monitoring, accountability, and oversight, the harm being done by these systems can go unnoticed for far too long. In the Netherlands, in several cases in the Netherlands, fraud detection systems have failed, violating fundamental rights and the rule of law, inflicting serious harm on some of the most vulnerable people in our societies. The child care benefit scandal stands out as the most tragic example. Thousands of parents were wrongly accused of fraud, forced into financial ruin, and faced devastating personal consequences because of overly rigid and biased automated decisions. For years, the Netherlands have served as a cautionary tale for other countries of just how devastating risk profiling algorithms can be when things go wrong. But I'm sorry to say, this is no longer the case. Other countries are now catching up. Scandals have surfaced in Australia and in the UK, and organizations like Amnesty International and Lighthouse Reports have uncovered discriminatory fraud detection systems in Sweden, in Denmark, in France, and in Serbia. And these are only the cases we know of. It may well be just the tip of the iceberg. There is a clear pattern here. It often starts with a strong societal and political push for a rapid and hardline answer to fraud. Government organizations, already under pressure from budget cuts and a tight labor market, are drawn to the promise of AI, a quick and automated solution that can be deployed on a large scale and that offers cost savings as well as higher hit rates. The responsibility for these systems is often placed in the hands of technical project teams, figuratively speaking, in the basement of organizations and or sometimes outsourced to external consultancy firms. Key stakeholders, such as government officials, policymakers, domain experts, lawyers, and the very people affected by these algorithms, are often not sufficiently involved. Project teams also often fail to clearly define the system's intended purpose, appropriate criteria for optimization, and the system constraints. For example, the maximum acceptable level of bias or the minimum required level of explainability. On the one hand, marketing talk and technical jargon obscures how these AI systems really work. On the other, people are afraid to ask stupid questions, stopping them from seeking clarity. This AI mystification reinforces the black box nature of the system, leaving too little room for critical questions and genuine reflection. The people affected by these algorithms, the people wrongly accused, feel stigmatized, powerless, and alone. They oftentimes do not even know that algorithmic risk profiling played a role. Without the information, the knowledge, the time, the money, the resources, they struggle with challenging these decisions. And finally, in the child care benefit scandal, people accused of fraud were put on a blacklist. This list was shared with other government organizations. They use this list to make their own decisions in entirely different contexts, even amplifying the harm being done by these algorithms. Together, these factors create a perfect storm with devastating consequences. So, what we need to prevent this from happening is transparency. Transparency for everyone at every level. Transparency to foster meaningful conversations in our society and in our political institutions about whether these systems are desirable, and if so, what safeguards should be in place. Transparency to be able to hold the right people accountable. Transparency to verify whether these systems work as intended and are not discriminatory. Transparency to understand the system's outcome and to empower people to challenge these decisions. What we need is transparency to make sure that these systems are responsible and trustworthy. In the Netherlands, we developed several tools to improve the transparency of algorithmic systems. Let me introduce you to a few of them. First, the Fundamental Rights and Algorithm Impact Assessment, the FRIA, a framework to facilitate interdisciplinary dialogue and to help identify and mitigate risks to fundamental rights. The FRIA spans multiple stages, from the rationale behind an algorithm through data input and data processing to its implementation and its implications for fundamental rights. At its core, the FRIA asks a crucial question. Do we want this system? Is the use of the system proportional to its intended purpose? And can we justify the implications for fundamental rights? From my experience, these assessments lead to important conversations and greater awareness among key stakeholders involved. They help make implicit assumptions, trade-offs, and ethical questions, help them make those questions explicit, ensuring that key questions are addressed rather than left unanswered. Switzerland is set to ratify the AI Convention of the Council of Europe, and this could make the FRIA especially interesting to you. The Council of Europe tasked the Alan Turing Institute with developing a gold standard for human rights impact assessments for AI. It's called the Huderia. Last summer, we ran a pilot together with the Alan Turing Institute and the Committee on AI of the Council of Europe. Our conclusion, the FRIA integrates seamlessly within the Huderia framework. And this could well make it also a very interesting instrument, valuable instrument, to other countries like Switzerland seeking to implement the AI Convention. Next, the Algorithm Register. The Algorithm Register is an online platform where Dutch government organizations can disclose information about the algorithms they use. It includes key information such as intended purpose, risk classification, role of the algorithm within the process it supports, and contact details. Currently, the Algorithm Register contains almost 800 algorithms. The ultimate goal is to list all algorithms with significant impact on citizens, enabling researchers, civil society, and the media to scrutinize these algorithms and hold government responsible. The Algorithm Register has been developed in an open and transparent way through community meetups and on GitHub. Everyone can help improve the register by giving feedback and sharing their ideas. An online register with metadata about algorithms, that's a great start, But to truly assess whether an algorithm is responsible and trustworthy, more is needed. This doesn't have to happen all at once. It can be built up step by step. Government organizations can make choices or prioritize based on the risk classification of an algorithm, the costs, the intellectual property right, potential risks such as gaming the system and cyber attacks from information shared. And they can start by sharing more details like documentation on how the system works or safeguards that are put in place to ensure systems to ensure that the errors or misuse are properly addressed. And they can also enable interaction with the algorithm, for instance, via through an API or by sharing a serialized model or synthetic data. They can publish assessments or audit reports. And at the highest level of transparency, they could even make the algorithm fully open source. The truth is, many government organizations find it very challenging or even daunting to disclose information about their algorithms. The 5-star model for transparent algorithms helps guide these decisions and make it easier to determine what information to share and to what extent. Now, nobody wants an algorithm that is unfair and discriminatory. We all agree upon that. But how to guarantee that a model is fair and unbiased, that is a very difficult question, and we do not agree upon that. I experienced that firsthand. My team was asked to perform a bias assessment on an algorithmic risk profiling system with a profound impact on people's lives. We conducted a thorough analysis, but our client was not satisfied with our approach or our findings. So they brought in another team to redo the analysis. This team used another method and reached completely different conclusions. Later, journalists obtained the two reports, and a big Dutch newspaper published an article on the front page. And the focus of the article was on how an unfavorable report seemed to have been dismissed. But no attention was given to something that I find important, that depending on the methodology you use, you can make a statistical case for the same system to be both biased and unbiased. It was a very valuable lesson for me. A bias assessment is also a model of the world, a model of reality. It is a simplification of reality. And the questions you ask, the way you view the world, assumptions you make, they all shape the outcome. Bias assessments are not an exact science, and that is why it should not be left solely to a few technical experts or statisticians. To help government organizations with this challenge, the Dutch NGO Algorithm Audit developed a standard. The standard is based on some of the cases I mentioned in a previous slide. It is called the Public Standard Profiling Algorithms. This standard is a practical, step-by-step approach for preventing discrimination by algorithmic risk profiling systems. It consists of three parts, a quantitative assessment, a qualitative assessment, and organizational control measures. The standard is very comprehensive and detailed. I will not go into it any further, but you can have a look yourself. It is open source and online available to everyone. So frameworks, tools, standards, they all provide guidance, but they cannot provide us with a definitive answer to the question, what is ethical and what is responsible in a specific context? That answer must come from us, from people. Fortunately, we can learn from each other, and real cases play a very important role in this process. To support this, the concept of algoprudence was introduced. Bottom-up, case-based, normative advice for algorithms. It works like jurisprudence, but for algorithms. How does it work exactly? A real case is submitted to a normative advice committee with an ethical question. The normative advice committee provides a thorough and well-justified answer. The answer, together with the case, is published in an online algoprudence database. By collecting and sharing these cases and answers, we create a growing body of knowledge, and this body of knowledge can then be used to inform ethical decision-making on algorithms. For example, following the case of Rotterdam's decommissioned welfare fraud detection system, the key question here was, how do we make ethical and well-justified choices when selecting risk criteria? What risk criteria are eligible? And you remember the example from my introduction, the young single mother who struggles with reading and writing and who seemingly has an unprofessional appearance. Well, the normative advice committee deemed age to be an eligible risk criterion. But sex was not. Sex is unlawful in this context and therefore an ineligible risk criterion. The number of children could not substantively be linked to the risk of welfare fraud, and therefore was also considered ineligibly. And then the literacy level was deemed ineligible because of the risk of proxy discrimination. Literacy level is highly correlated with migration background. And finally, an unprofessional appearance was also deemed ineligible because of the subjective nature of this criterion. Well, this concludes my section on algoprudence. It's, I think, a very interesting and important topic. And if you find this also interesting, be sure to have a look at the online algoprudence database. In the Netherlands, less than 5% of court rulings is published online in a searchable format. This makes it very difficult for victims and their lawyers to realize that they are not the only one, and that there may well be a systemic problem, and to reach out to other people and find help and to build upon existing cases. It makes it also very difficult for the judiciary to identify patterns and to raise concerns about laws that are too harsh. And this is why the judiciary now aims to increase the percentage of court rulings published to 75%. The main challenge here lays in the manual publication process, and then more specifically, the anonymization of these court rulings. Finally, there are ideas to extend the My Government portal, making it way easier for citizens to see how algorithms have played a role in decisions that affected them. It wouldn't just give an overview of algorithms that were used, but also the specific algorithm, the input data, and the outcome of the algorithm for a given decision. And it would even enable them to test how the outcome of an algorithm changes with different input values. But this is still a prototype, a work in progress. Okay, well, this was just a sub-selection of tools. There are more out there. If you want to learn more, feel free to reach out. And I would like to end with two key points. The first, the crucial role of civil society and investigative journalists. The tools that I've shown you would not exist without them. They were the ones to expose these systems and to set everything in motion, and we need them just as much to keep improving these tools and to hold governments accountable. Second, let's not just focus on punitive uses of AI. Let's explore how we can use AI to actually help these people, to inform them about benefits they are entitled to prevent them from making mistakes in application forms, to help anonymize court rulings so they can be published online, and to help detect discrimination in case handling. We need each other to envision a world in which we can use AI in new ways, ways that do not target already marginalized groups, but that can help build a better society for everyone. Thank you.
And also...
Wow. What an interesting insight. Thank you very much, Willy. We have time for one or maybe two short questions. If you have questions, please come to the microphone in the center such that we can also record it. We have time for one or two questions.
Oh, I will. This is where you can download my slides.
If not, I will have... Oh, yeah, we have one question.
Do you have a reference for a BIAS assessment?
A reference?
Yes.
You know, the...
For the BIAS.
The standard I told you about? Or
only the not the risk assessment, but only for the bias.
For the bias assessment,
yes.
Well, at this time, I would really recommend the public standard profiling algorithms that Algorithm Audit made. And if you, I provided the link in my slides on the previous slide. So if you download my slides, and otherwise you can also contact me on LinkedIn, and I'll provide you with the link. And it really is. I really wished that we had this standard when we did the bias assessment I told you about, which ended up on the front page of the newspaper, because it would have really been helpful. Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you. Next question.
Yes. Thank you very much for your presentation. It was very interesting and very insightful.
Thank you.
I just have a question. Do you also look at what kind of algorithms the government is using? So where are these models coming from? How were they trained? Have there maybe human rights violations while training the algorithms maybe 3 years ago, 5 years ago? Is there also ideas surrounding this?
You mean like are we testing or assessing algorithms that have been in use for a longer period?
Or? Yeah, or maybe if you maybe start using ChatGPT in some sort and you kind of look into how has ChatGPT been trained during its development, maybe a few years back also, where there may have been some violations of human rights for the workers that have trained the algorithms initially.
For sure. I know of some cases I wasn't personally involved, but of assessments that have already been done, prior assessments, on some of these cases, and there these issues, for sure, have been put on the table.
All right, and I totally agree. It was very interesting and eye-opening presentation. Thank you very much, Willy. Thanks for being here, and thanks for the very good question. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.